Translation purported by His Divine Grace. Abhaya Charanaravinda Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Just as the senses are pacified when consciousness and life return, so when Krishna was freed from the danger, all the boys, including Balaram, thought that their life had been restored. They embraced Krishna in good consciousness, and then they collected their own cows and returned to Brajabhumi, where they declared the incident loudly. Purport. It was the practice of the inhabitants of Brajabhumi to compose poetry about the incidents that occurred in the forest when Krishna performed his different activities of killing the asuras. They would compose all the stories in poetry or have this done by professional poets, and then they would sing about these incidents. Thus it is written here that the boys sang very loudly. Hare Krishna. So we'll read the three texts one more time to remember what was it all about. When Krishna, the leader of the Vaishnavas, saw that the demon Bakasur, the friend of Kamsa, was endeavoring to attack him with his arms, he captured the demon by the two halves of the beak, and in the presence of all the coward boys, Krishna very easily purificated him as a child splits a blade of birana grass. By thus killing the demon, Krishna very much pleased the denizens of heaven. At that time, the celestial denizens of the higher planetary system showered Malika Pushpa flowers grown in Nandan Kanan upon Krishna, the enemy of Bakasur. They also congratulated him by sounding celestial kettle drums and conch shells and by offering prayers. Seeing these, the coward boys were struck with wonder. Just as the senses are pacified, when consciousness and life return, so when Krishna was freed from this danger, all the boys, including Balaram, thought that their life had been restored. They embraced Krishna in good consciousness, and then they collected their own cows and returned to Brajabhumi, where they declared the incident loudly. So, victory. Krishna returned what appeared to be from the mouth of death. And everyone is happy. All the coward boys, they celebrate, and the demigods are celebrating victory. It's very interesting what's happening in Vrindavan. Actually, we are very fortunate. In connection to the previous verse, Sridhar Prabhu was telling how fortunate we are to have access to these amazing pastimes. By the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, and especially because this is the 11th chapter of the 10th canto, so this is practically the end of Srila Prabhupada's manifest pastimes. And it's very amazing that Srila Prabhupada had a very strong desire, which he expressed a number of times, to fight for Krishna by spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world towards the very end and die on the battlefield, like Arjuna. He said, Arjuna didn't die, of course, but he wanted to fight till the very end, like Arjuna did, and leave his body on the battlefield. This was Prabhupada's expressed desire, and he did so. Like Bhishma Dev, giving final instructions, and in full Krishna consciousness, he departed to the spiritual world. So Srila Prabhupada, till the very end, practically speaking, he was translating these wonderful verses and giving Bhaktivedanta purports. And we can understand that he was absorbed in Krishna Lila in Vrindavan, and Yam Yam Bapi Smaran Bhavan Tyajat Tatne Kalevaram. Whatever you focused on, this is where you're going, right? And so it's so amazing how Krishna arranged it all, right? He let Srila Prabhupada stay till he started translating and explaining the Braja Lila of Krishna. And right in the middle of Braja Lila, he departed to Goloka Vrindavan. So this is so amazing how Krishna is organizing everything for his pure devotee. And we are very fortunate that Srila Prabhupada left the same boat on our side. And so we can take advantage of that. And also follow his footsteps and go to the spiritual world. And these are amazing revelations, what's happening in the Supreme Lord's personal home. Not many people, hardly anyone knows, forget what's happening in the Lord's home. Many people don't even know who is God. Like so many religious people, they speak about God, but you ask them who is God, how he looks like, where does he live, what he is doing, they'll get stuck, right? They would never be able to answer any of these questions. And it's only Vedic literature which explains it very, very clearly. And these pastimes have many dimensions. And one dimension, of course, is what we are seeing, what's happening in the relationship between Krishna and cowherd boys and demons also in Vrindavan. But the other dimension is, how is it connected to us? How is it relevant for me? Like we may, or some people may think that, you know, these are the tales from the ancient India, right? And why do I have to spend so much time listening and reading and studying the ancient Indian tales in 21st century, right? So that's very valid doubt. And so acharyas are explaining that, what is the relevance of these pastimes in our lives. And so specifically to Krishna's killing different demons in Vrindavan, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Chaitanya Shikshamrita is explaining, and Krishna Samhita also. He is explaining that these demons, they personify different anarthas or obstacles on the path of our devotional service. And killing the demons signifies overcoming the obstacles, right? How many of you want all the obstacles to be removed from the path of your bhakti? And so Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, it is by listening and contemplating on these pastimes we can remove these anarthas, unwanted desires and propensities from our hearts. So we are very fortunate. And specifically, Bakasur. Probably some of you know what is the specific anartha Bakasur represents. It is duplicity. And it is very interesting because text 51 explains that Krishna took Bakasur by the two halves of his beak and he bifurcated him, means he split him into two halves, right? So that's a kind of indication that his duplicitous nature was revealed, right? Because duplicity, sometimes, I think it's coming from Greek philosophy, that there was one personality in Greek whatever pantheon, having two faces. Right? And so duplicity means someone has two faces, one for public and the other one for oneself. Right? And so Bakasura ended up with two faces. So his face was split into two. So his duplicity was exposed. And so he was killed. It's very interesting. Bakasura was trying to swallow Krishna, but he couldn't swallow him because... actually, it's very interesting that... Did it really matter for Krishna to be swallowed by Bakasura or not? Because he is existing inside of Bakasura also. So, and we can see that in case of other demons like... I mean, not necessarily demons, but in case of other pastimes where, you know, the disturbance was created to Krishna and the coward boys, the two specific pastimes I'm thinking is Brahma Vimohana Leela and how Indra was trying to attack Krishna. And we can see that in both cases, Brahma stole the coward boys and the calves. And Krishna haven't prevented that at all, didn't prevent it. He allowed Brahma to steal them. And he didn't do anything to return them either, right? He just expanded himself into as many boys and calves as were the original ones and maintained like that himself for a year. And Indra was also trying to do even worse, trying to kill all the Brajabasis and Krishna by torrential rainfalls and hail. And Krishna didn't try to stop Indra at all. He just acted in a very humanly way. He thought, okay, it's raining quite heavily, and everyone is suffering from the rain. I have to find an umbrella to protect everybody. What can I use for umbrella? Okay, this mountain will do. So he picked up the Govardhan, used it as an umbrella for the whole village. And he just patiently waited. I mean, he was not bored. He was surrounded by his loving devotees, so he was happy. But he was just waiting until Indra would get tired and realize his own mistake. So it appears like Krishna is inclined to fulfill everybody's desires, even the desires of those who try to, you know, disturb his pastimes. Okay. Brahma wanted to steal, Krishna allowed him to steal. Indra wanted to, you know, try to destroy Vrindavan, so Krishna allowed him to try as long as he wanted. And so why, in the case of Bakasura wanted to swallow Krishna. So why would not Krishna allow Bakasura to swallow him? The reason is very simple, because Bakasura was one and he wanted to swallow Krishna, but there were many coward boys who didn't want Krishna to be swallowed, right? And so Krishna had to fulfill their desires also. So he actually fulfilled both, right? He allowed himself to be swallowed, and then he came out because the coward boys didn't want him to be swallowed, right? And then the coward boys were not so happy that Bakasura is trying to attack Krishna, and so Krishna had to stop him by splitting him into two halves. So Krishna is just completely neutral. Samoham sarobhutishu navritishtasya stinapriya. For him, there are no one who is very dear or no one whom he hates. He just fulfills everybody's desire. Nitya nitanam chatanas chatananam. And so, but now, the desires of the coward boys are fulfilled, but it's also this is also a very important thing to understand, that practically at the end of every pastime where Krishna is killing another demon in Vrindavan, there are so many, you know, like so many flowers falling from the sky, and there is a huge kirtan happening behind the clouds, right? Why? Because, well, Krishna came for a specific mission, and Paritranaya Sadhunam Vinasha Chadushkritam, to save his devotees and destroy the demons. And we know that the whole planet was heavily oppressed by all the demons. And Krishna was there only, Krishna was the only hope for all the demigods. As you remember, they prayed in the beginning, right? Asking Krishna to please come and help them. And so Krishna came, and now he is helping the demigods. He is getting rid of all these demons. But it appears like at some point demons are nearly defeating Krishna, right? At some point Bakasura actually swallowed Krishna. And so you can imagine, you know, Krishna is the only hope for the whole universe, for all the demigods. And they are watching very intensely, you know, like very closely what's happening. Because for them, Krishna is playing, of course. But for them, it's the question of life and death. If Krishna would be finished, they would also be finished, right? And then you can see these descriptions when, you know, it appears like Krishna is losing. All the demigods, they lament, they shout, "Alas, alas, what happened?" But when Krishna is defeating another demon, they become very jubilant, and so they shower all these flowers and they start huge kirtan, ecstatic kirtan in the sky. But then for the coward boys, it's a confusion. You know, it's like they're just playing with Krishna. And of course, Krishna is doing many amazing things, but suddenly there are flowers, you know, the shower of flowers falling from the sky. I mean, probably you would be very surprised if that would happen to you. Of course, UK is very famous for showers. But I don't know if anyone ever came across showers of flowers. That would be very surprising, right? That would keep you wondering for a long time what happened. And in Vrindavan, it seems like a regular occurrence, actually daily occurrence. Every day they have showers of flowers because every day Krishna is killing some one demon or the other. So very surprising life in Vrindavan. And it's interesting that the coward boys, they're realizing at that point that, yes, seems like, well, if whoever Krishna is, but he's like really, really powerful personality, if he's worshipped and glorified even by the demigods, right? But then Krishna is covering them with Yogamaya again, and again they think, oh, he's just our friend. Okay, he's cool, but he's still our friend. So they don't have that attitude of awe and reverence towards Krishna, because Krishna doesn't want it. Krishna wants to have friendship with his devotees, with his pure devotees, those who can properly reciprocate with him. And so it's not by chance. It's actually a very short pastime if you look at it, just few verses in Bhagavatam. But it's really important because coming back to this point that Bakasura represents duplicity or cheating, you can say, right? Duplicity means cheating. Cheating mentality, and actually it attacks the very core of our spiritual advancement, right? Because what is the most important quality or principle for our spiritual advancement? There are four, satya, daya, tapa, shuchi, right? Four most important principles. And four regulative principles you can say, are the tips of the iceberg for these four fundamental principles, right? And so, which of these four, duplicity or dishonesty, attacks satya, the very first one, right? The first and foremost, the principle of truthfulness. For those who are not familiar with Sanskrit, satya means truthfulness, daya means mercy or compassion, tapa means austerity or self-control, and shruti means purity. And so, even though this is really short pastime, but it helps to deal with the core danger to our spiritual life. And it's not so easy to overcome, right? I don't know if any of you had the experience noticing duplicity within yourself. And duplicity means you want to serve Krishna and you don't want to enjoy and control like a materialistic person. You want to be pure. You want to only think of Krishna and how to please Krishna. And externally, you do some devotional activities. You can hear about Krishna. You can chant Krishna's name, Krishna's glories, etc., etc. But then, or serve Krishna in different ways. But suddenly, within your mind, something else is happening. Completely opposite to what you're striving for, right? It's kind of self-defeating propensity pops up. Anyone had that experience? So, it seems to be pretty common. And it's a very strong one, if you noticed. It's not very easy one to overcome, right? And it's like we're noticing this duplicity within ourselves, but the question is, what do we do about it, right? Because we try so hard, and it doesn't seem to go away at all. And of course, it says, fake it until you make it. It's fine, but then at some point, we might ask ourselves, you know, like, for how much longer I'll have to fake it, right? Because it might become frustrating at some point, you know. Like Satswarup Maharaj wrote this book, Am I Devotee or Demon? And so sometimes, you know, we might become so frustrated that we might be asking ourselves, am I devotee or demon? You know, okay, externally I'm acting like a devotee, but internally, you know, my consciousness is really, really far from everything devotional. So what to do? That's the £1 million question. Anyone's interested to know what to do? Okay. And so the remedy is right here in this pastime. And actually it is in this very verse we've chanted. And I'll read the translation of this verse once, one more time, because it's so important for us. Just as the senses are pacified when consciousness and life return, so when Krishna was freed from this danger, all the boys, including Balaram, thought that their life had been restored. They embraced Krishna in good consciousness. In good consciousness means in Krishna consciousness. And then they collected their own calves and returned to Brajabhumi, where they declared the incident loudly. Very important description. And actually, if you noticed, this verse starts with the word muktam. And muktam means liberation. So Krishna was liberated, so-called liberated. Of course, it's a pastime. So Krishna was apparently liberated from the influence of Bakasura. And all the coward boys were completely relieved. And they became happy again, and they started singing Krishna's glories, right? And This is an indication that our Krishna consciousness, how our Krishna consciousness can be liberated from the demoniac propensities, how we can restore what Srila Prabhupada defines here as good consciousness, proper consciousness, Krishna consciousness. And it's not by chance we mentioned why, what was the reason why Krishna freed himself from the influence of Bakasura? Why did Krishna came out of his mouth and killed Bakasura? The prime motivation for that was a very strong desire of the coward boys. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Shri Shri Staram Lakshman Hanuman, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai. And so it's because coward boys, they wanted to see Krishna. They wanted to be with Krishna. That's why Krishna came out. And that's why he killed Bakasura. So Krishna is fulfilling our desire. And when we want to be with Krishna and we want to associate with Krishna together, so these two things are very important. First one is Krishna or serving Krishna, and the other one is sadhu sangha, which is indicated here, that all the coward boys, right, they're always together, they're best friends with each other. They think alike, they act alike, they really support each other. And so, sadhu sangha is very, very important element in our devotional development. And it's very important to understand that to take benefit from sadhu sangha, it's not enough to be surrounded by sadhus. Sometimes it's happening that someone is in the association of devotees, but still gets very little benefit. Simply for the reason that we might be surrounded by the devotees, but we do not take advantage of that opportunity. Like you probably heard the proverb that you can bring the horse to the lake, but you cannot force the horse to drink water, right? So even though externally we might have all these advantages, but if we are not using those advantages, there is no benefit, right? Like Prabhupada was telling about licking the bottle of honey from outside. It's not going to nourish us at all, right? Will give no benefit. And so, first of all, the first and foremost point, that the maximum benefit we get from the association with pure devotees. And who are the pure devotees? They are described right here. Those who are so ecstatic in Krishna consciousness that they always glorify Krishna and they sing his glories. There is a very nice verse in Gopi Gita, which probably some devotees know by heart. So if you know, we can chant it together. Tava kathamritam tapta jivanam kavi biriditam kalmasapaham shavana mangalam shemadatatam bhuvi grinantiye buridajanam. So the pastimes of Krishna or anything connected to Krishna is amrita, is a nectar, real nectar. Tavakathamritam, tapta jivanam, and this nectar removes all the difficulties in our lives. Kavibiriditam, and this pastimes and Krishna's glories are sang by kavis. This is what is depicted in this verse, that, you know, these coward boys are real kavis. They just, and if you've noticed, the entire Bhagavatam is practically poetry. Entire Bhagavad Gita is poetry, and that's why it's explained in Brahma Samhita. What's that? Shri Akanta Kanta Parama Purusha Kalpataravo Druma Bhumis Chintamani Toyam Amritam Kathaganam Natyam Gamanam Apimbamshe. That spiritual world, Galoka Vrindavan, is the place where no one talks. Everybody is singing. No one walks. Everybody is dancing, right? And there are festivals every day. Of course, rivers of nectar, etc., etc. Wish-fulfilling desires and special cows, kamadhenus, and so many amazing features of the spiritual world are described, but this is one feature, that only kavis, they live in the spiritual world. So all the pure devotees are kavis, and so this is one of the quality of the devotees, that devotees are poets, devotees are so poetic. We can see that. And why devotees are so poetic? Because they have such a deep feeling towards, you know, so such deep feelings towards Krishna. And so these coward boys, they always glorify Krishna, they always compose poetry and sing his glories. We kind of repeat the words of the pure devotees, you know, we sing their songs. Why? Because we don't have so much devotion yet to compose our own glorifications of Krishna. But by associating with these pure devotees and chanting their glories of Krishna, chanting the glories of Krishna they composed, we can purify our own consciousness. And there are many things to say in this regard, but personally I have few songs which are my favorites, and one of the, of course, there are hundreds and thousands of amazing pure Vaishnavas poets, but I have my own, you know, attachments in that regard, and so one of them is very special Vaishnava. His name is Rasa Khan. And he, maybe it's because he, like me, comes from Islamic background. He used to be a Sufi darvish, so he was wandering mendicant. And so by chance he came to Vraj, and he was so enchanted by Krishna and devotional service that he never left. And he stayed in Vraj till the end of his life. And he composed so many amazing poems about Krishna. And all the Brajabasis, they appreciated him so much that after he left his body, they placed his body in Samadhi. And this Samadhi is situated in Gokul, where Krishna stole his butter. And so I wanted you to hear just very short poems he composed. I've chosen three. And, you know, no amount of translation will ever give justice to the original. So I wanted you to hear this Hindi. It's composed in Hindi, just to make sure that simple people understand. And many of you do understand Hindi. How many of you understand Hindi? Okay. So I wanted Arun to read or chant the original verses for you so that you would appreciate the original flavor, please.
The name of the poem is Effortless Worship. Suniye sabai ki kahiye na kachu rahiye imi baba bagra me kariye vrata ne ma sachiye liye jena Tentariye mana sagarame miliye sabai so dura bhava bina rahiye sata santa ujagarame rasa khane gobinda yahin yon bhajiye jimi nagari ko chita gagarame.
Thank you. Actually, this is the second one. There is the first one. I also wanted you to read. This is a very amazing description he gives in this very short poem. It's called Effortless Worship. How many of you want to easily perform Krishna consciousness with no strain whatsoever? So this is what it says. Listen to everyone, but do not say a word. In this manner, remain in the world. Perform your vows and practices with sincerity. They will carry you across the mind's ocean. Greet all without negativity and remain in the illumination of devotional association. Rasa Khan says, worship Govinda the way a village woman balances a water jug upon her head with effortless concentration. And so there is the first text also, which is it starts with Manusha Hoto Vahi Rasikhani. I don't get it. Anyway, I'll just read the translation for you. This is the desire of Rasa Khan. If I, Rasa Khan, am to be reborn as a man, then let me live in Braj as a co-lad, as a coward boy, in the village of Gokul. If I am to be an animal, then what shall I be? A cow that grazes daily at Nanda's herd. If I am to be a rock, then let me rest upon the mountain that Krishna held in his hand. Not a bad desire, right? To be born as Govardhan Shila. As an umbrella against Indra's storm. If I am to be a bird, then let me live in the branches of a kadamba tree by the banks of the Yamuna. So, and the third one is the most esoteric, the deepest one. Senseless. You've got this one? Really? Okay. Anyway, you wanna try? Read Hindi. Jala. Yeah.
Jala ki na ghata bahren maga ki na baga dharen gahara ki na kachu karem baithi bharen sansuri ekai suni lota ge eka lota potabe ekani dikrani nikasi aga ansuri kahiye rasa khani so sabai braja bani tavadi badika kahiyahaya bhai kola hansuriri kariyai upaye bansa dariyai katiyai nahi upajhai bansa nahi bhaje feri bansuri. On her way to the well to fill her water pot, she heard his flute. Now she can't keep her feet on the path, nor can she accomplish a single task at home. She just sits there, sighing heavily. Another gopi who heard Krishna's flute falls senseless to the ground, and a third rolls around on the floor, tears pouring profusely from her eyes. Sings Rasa Khan, Krishna has killed them all. He is an executioner, and we are the laughingstock of our entire clan. Now we must cut down every bamboo tree and make sure they never grow back to ensure that Krishna will never play a bamboo flute again.
That's very radical, right? Let's cut down all the bamboos, make sure Krishna cannot make his flutes anymore and doesn't disturb any gopis. But these are the ecstasies of such an exalted soul. And we should always remember that fire comes from fire. So if we want to be in real Krishna consciousness, you know, Krishna consciousness is there where, like, logs of wood with potential fire inside. But how do we make this fire come out? By the association of blazing with blazing sadhus. I think that was Achyutananda Prabhu's book, The Blazing Sadhus. So Prabhupada was the example of such a blazing sadhu. He was really fired up in Krishna consciousness. I mean, just imagine, at 70 years, after 70 years, after two heart attacks, to do what he did, you have to be really fired up for that, right? And so he caught this fire from other blazing sadhus like his Guru Maharaj and others. And so this is the only way for us, that we need to catch Krishna consciousness from those who really have it. And this, you know, Prabhupada often quoted that important verse from Mahabharata, Dharmo pratishta shrutaya vibhina na savrisir yasya matam nabhinam dharmasya tatva vitam guhaya mahajanaya nagata sapantha, that we should follow in the footsteps of Mahajans, because dharmasya tatva vihitam guhaya, that the truth of dharma is hidden within their hearts. And so to follow their path, their footsteps, means to understand what's in their hearts. And Prabhupada explains very clearly in one purport in the seventh canto, explaining one prayer by Prahlad Maharaj, that these songs and this poetry is the revelation of the pure devotees' hearts. They pour out the essence of Krishna consciousness for us. And so it's really, really important for us to take advantage of that revelation and become purified. So, and if we don't do that, the risk is that instead of becoming purified, we may become putrefied. Again, Purna Mushika Bhava. And just one other thing I wanted to share in regards to Kavi, quality of the devotees. It's such a outstanding quality that everybody is impressed with that, even ordinary people. Like there is one example in Crimea. Those of you who follow politics, you know that Crimea is a disputed territory. And because of that dispute, you know, economic sanctions from both sides, etc., the population really suffers, and you know, the unemployment level is really high, and it's really hard to live there. And there are devotees there. And devotees were thinking what to do, and they tried to maintain themselves with the prasadam sales, but the competition was very high. Everybody wanted to sell something, etc. And then devotees, under the pressure, they came up with a strategy which put them above competition. And now they increased their prasadam sales to such an extent that, you know, there is so much demand for prasadam that, you know, they don't have enough manpower and they don't, yeah, to distribute and produce prasadam. And so they kind of appeal to the entire Russia. If any devotee wants to come and join us, you know, you can make a lot of money in this poor place. Would you like to know how they manage to do it? What is the secret of success? That these devotees, they sell prasadam on the beach because it's kind of holiday place, destination. And there are plenty of people selling food on the beach. But then devotees decided to use poetry to talk to people. And, I mean, it's pretty hard to kind of translate. I'll try to give you some ideas what they say to people, just to understand why people become so excited about prasadam. So they mostly, they only sell samosas, and their brand is called Divine Samos. This is how they call their brand, Divine Samos. And so they tell people things like, excuse my poor English, I'll try my best to put it in poetic form in English, that, you know, they have samosas with different fillings, like some vegetables, some fruits, and so they say, by tasting the samosas with our filling, you will get amazing feeling. What they say? Run up, buy and try, and you will see the divine light. And this is why even all polar Eskimos aspire to try our samos. Things like that, you know. And they go on and on all day long. And it's like people, they just run just to hear what they say, and then they bite samosas just because they entertain so much. And, you know, they ran out of samosas so quickly. And so this is what it is, that people becoming attracted to the devotees, Krishna consciousness, and everything else is just, you know, follows. And I was thinking that if we would only capitalize on this one quality of the devotees, and we do have devotees who are very poetically inclined, and, you know, devotees are always raking their heads how to make communities which would be attractive and sustainable, and it's very difficult. And I was thinking, if we could make a community consisting of the devotees who are poets by nature, and the only rule, they wouldn't have to do anything, the only rule, they could live at their pleasure in that community, do whatever they want. But if they would agree to speak only poetry, no prose, in that village, can you imagine how many tourists we would have? And how much these devotees could preach? Because it does not exist, right? So something very unique, something very special. But this is how people live in the spiritual world. So we could actually show people, have a showcase, that this is the replica of the spiritual world, of Kingdom of God. Everyone speaks poetry. And we could very powerfully preach. You know, like, we wouldn't even have to, like, push. People would tell each other about this. So it is so important. This is such a powerful quality of a devotees, kavi, that they can, you know, that can change people's consciousness on the spot without much effort. Hare Krishna. Thank you all very much. I don't think we have any time for questions because we already went ahead of beyond the deadline. So, Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shala Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanande.